That evening, photographs of Holly were front-paged by the late edition of the Journal American and by the early editions of both the Daily News and the Daily Mirror. The publicity had nothing to do with runaway horses. It concerned quite another matter. As the headlines revealed, Playgirl arrested in narcotics scandal, Journal American. Arrest dope-smuggling actress, Daily News. Drug ring exposed, glamour girl held, Daily Mirror. Of the lot, the Daily News printed the most striking picture. Holly entering police headquarters, wedged between two muscular detectives, one male, one female. In this squalid context, even her clothes, she was still wearing her riding costume, windbreaker and blue jeans, suggested a gang mall hooligan. An impression, dark glasses, disarrayed coiffure, and a picayune cigarette dangling from sullen lips did not diminish. The story ran three full columns. Members of Cafe Society were stunned today by the arrest of gorgeous Holly Golightly, 20-year-old Hollywood starlet and highly publicized girl about New York. At the same time, 2 p.m., police nabbed Oliver O'Shaughnessy, 52, of the Hotel Seaboard West 49th Street, as he exited from a Hamburg heaven on Madison Avenue. Both are alleged by District Attorney Frank L. Donovan to be important figures in an international drug ring dominated by the notorious mafia Führer, Salvatore Sally Tomato. Currently in Sing Sing, serving a 5-year rap for political bribery. O'Shaughnessy, a defrocked priest variously known in crimeland circles as Father and the Padre, has a history of arrests dating back to 1934. Miss Golightly, who has no previous criminal record, was arrested in her luxurious apartment at a swank East Side address. Although the DA's office has issued no formal statement, responsible sources insist the blonde and beautiful actress, not long ago the constant companion of multimillionaire Rutherford Trawler, has been acting as liaison between the imprisoned Tomato and his chief lieutenant, O'Shaughnessy. Posing as a relative of Tomato's, Miss Golightly is said to have paid weekly visits to Sing Sing, and on these occasions, Tomato supplied her with verbally coded messages, which she then transmitted to O'Shaughnessy. Via this link, Tomato was able to keep first-hand control of a worldwide narcotics syndicate, with outposts in Mexico, Cuba, Sicily, Tangier, Tehran, and Dakar. There is one especially gross error in this report. She was not arrested in her luxurious apartment. It took place in my own bathroom. I was soaking away my horse-riding pains in a tub of scalding water laced with Epsom salts. Holly was sitting on the edge of the tub, waiting to rub me with Sloane's liniment and tuck me into bed. There was a knock at the front door. As the door was unlocked, Holly called, "Come in." In came Madame Safia Spanella, trailed by a pair of civilian-clothed detectives, one of them a lady with thick yellow braids roped around her head.
"Here she is, the wanted woman,"
boomed Madame Spanella, leveling a finger first at Holly, then my nakedness.
"Look what a whore she is."
The male detective seemed embarrassed, but a harsh enjoyment tensed the face of his companion. She plumped a hand on Holly's shoulder, and in a surprising baby voice said,
"Come along, sister, you're going places."
Whereupon Holly coolly told her, "Get them cotton-picking hands off me, you dreary, driveling old bull dyke," which rather enraged the lady. She slapped Holly damned hard. So hard, her head twisted on her neck, and the bottle of liniment flung from her hand, smithereened on the tile floor, where I, scampering out of the tub to enrich the fray, stepped on it and all but severed both big toes. Nude and bleeding a path of bloody footprints, I followed the action as far as the hall. "Don't forget," Holly managed to instruct me as the detectives propelled her down the stairs, "please feed the cat." Of course, I believed Madame Spinella to blame. She'd several times called the authorities to complain about Holly. It didn't occur to me the affair could have dire dimensions until that evening when Joe Bell showed up, flourishing newspapers.
"You think it's so?"
he said.
"She was mixed up in this lousy business?"
"Well, yes." He popped a Tums in his mouth and, glaring at me, chewed it as though he were crushing my bones.
"Boy, that's rotten. And you meant to be her friend? What a bastard."
"Just a minute. I didn't say she was involved knowingly. She wasn't. But there she did do it. Carry messages and whatnot." He said,
"Jesus, she could get 10 years. More. You know her friends. These rich fellas. Come down to the bar, we'll start phoning. Our girl's gonna need some fancier shysters than I can afford."
Back at his bar, he propped me in the telephone booth with a triple martini and a brandy tumbler full of coins. But I couldn't think who to contact. Jose was in Washington, and I had no notion where to reach him there. Rusty Trawler? Not that bastard. Only, what other friends of hers did I know? I put through a call to Crestview 56958 in Beverly Hills. The number long-distance information gave me for O.J. Berman. The person who answered said Mr. Berman was having a massage and couldn't be disturbed. Sorry, try later. Hanging up, I remembered old Doc down in Tulip, Texas. But no, Holly wouldn't like it if I called him. She'd kill me good. I rang California again. The circuits were busy. Stayed busy. And by the time O.J. Berman was on the line, I'd emptied so many martinis, he had to tell me why I was phoning him.
"About the kid, isn't it? I spoke already to Iggy Feidelstein. Iggy's the best shingle in New York. I said, 'Iggy, you take care of it. Send me the bill. Only keep my name anonymous. See? Hey, don't worry. Iggy'll spring her tonight. Wouldn't surprise me she's home already.'"
But she wasn't. Nor had she returned the next morning when I went down to feed her cat. Having no key to the apartment, I used the fire escape and gained entrance through a window. The cat was in the bedroom, and he was not alone. A man was there, crouching over a suitcase. He had a pretty face, lacquered hair. He resembled Jose. Moreover, the suitcase he'd been packing contained the wardrobe Jose kept at Holly's. I said, "Did Mr. Ibarra Hager send you?"
"I am the cousin,"
he said with a wary grin and just penetrable accent. So, the diplomat was planning a powder. Well, I wasn't amazed or in the slightest sorry. Still, what a heartbreaking stunt. The cousin shut the suitcase and produced a letter.
"My cousin, she ask me leave that for his chum. You will oblige."
I sat down on Holly's bed and hugged Holly's cat to me and felt as badly for Holly every iota as she could feel for herself. Yes, I will oblige. And I did, without the least wanting to. But I hadn't the courage to destroy the letter, or the willpower to keep it in my pocket when Holly very tentatively inquired if by any chance I'd had news of Jose. It was 2 mornings later. I was sitting by her bedside in a room that reeked of iodine and bedpans. A hospital room. She'd been there since the night of her arrest. "Well, darling," she greeted me as I tiptoed toward her, carrying a carton of Picayune cigarettes and a wheel of new autumn violets. "I lost the air." She looked not quite 12 years. Her pale vanilla hair brushed back, her eyes, for once minus their dark glasses, clear as rainwater. One couldn't believe how ill she'd been. Yet it was true.
"Christ, I nearly cooled. No fooling. The fat woman almost had me. She was yakking up a storm. I guess I couldn't have told you about the fat woman, since I didn't know about her myself until my brother died. Right away, I was wondering where he'd gone, what it meant, Fred's dying. And then I saw her. She was there in the room with me, and she had Fred cradled in her arms. A fat, mean, red bitch, rocking in a rocking chair with Fred on her lap, and laughing like a brass band. The mockery of it. But it's all that's ahead of us, my friend. This comedienne waiting to give you the old razz. Now do you see why I went crazy and broke everything?
It was then she asked me about Jose. The instant she saw the letter, she squinted her eyes and bent her lips in a tough, tiny smile that advanced her age immeasurably.
"Darling," she instructed me, "would you reach in the drawer there and give me my purse? A girl doesn't read this sort of thing without her lipstick."
Guided by a compact mirror, she powdered, painted every vestige of 12-year-old out of her face. She shaped her lips with one tube, colored her cheeks from another. She penciled the rims of her eyes, blued the lids, attached pearls to her ears, and donned her dark glasses. Thus armored, she ripped open the letter and let her eyes race through it while her stony, small smile grew smaller and harder. Eventually, tossing me the letter, she said, "Maybe this will come in handy if you ever write a rat romance. Don't be hoggy, read it aloud. I'd like to hear it myself." It began,
"My dearest little girl, I have loved you, knowing you were not as others. But conceive of my despair upon discovering in such a brutal and public style how very different you are from the manner of woman a man of my faith and career could hope to make his wife. Verily, I grieve for the disgrace of your present circumstance, and I do not find it in my heart to add my condemn to the condemn that surrounds you. So I hope you will find it in your heart not to condemn me. I have my family to protect, and my name. And I am a coward where those institutions enter. Forget me, beautiful child. I am no longer here. I am gone home. But may God be always with you and your child. May God not be the same as Jose."
"Well," she said.
"Well, in a way, it seems quite honest," I said. "And even touching?"
"Touching? That square ball jazz?"
"But after all, he says he's a coward. And from his point of view, you must see..." Holly, however, did not want to admit that she saw. Yet her face, despite its cosmetic disguise, confessed it.
"All right. He's not a rat without reason. A supersized King Kong-type rat like Rusty. But oh, gee. Golly damn,"
she said, jamming a fist into her mouth like a bawling baby.
"I did love him. The rat."